Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
I am in Los Angeles, or right outside of LA. Let's keep it here in SoCal. I've said it before, but apparently I need to say it yet again. Shouting out to you Laker fans, car flags up. If you were driving to work, I hope you went the long way. If you're taking the long way home, just to get those flags flapping in the wind a little bit longer, that's what you need to do. You have to be feeling it today. LA, 112. OKC, 107. And there is so much to talk about regarding the LA Lakers. I'm not even sure where to start. How about here? How about with OKC, since I know some of you are going to try to come in here and kill my buzz by killing the Thunder. I get it. OKC is not who they once were. Hell, the Munster kid himself would even cop to that. Say what you want and say what you will about Billy Donovan. I mean, sure, he looks like the Munster kid. And I know that when you think of him, the first thing you think of is not the Thunder or even his amazing Florida Gator teams, but rather this amazing theme song and his amazing look. But the thing about the Munster kid is he can flat out coach, but he can only coach the guys that Sam Presti gives to him. So no, I'll give you that. The Thunder are not who they were or who they've been, obviously. And no, the Lakers' performance last night was not their best of the year either, but it didn't need to be, and it was good. And just as importantly, it was a blast. They've got juice. There's juice. There's energy. There's buzz. There's star power. It's back. Did you see it last night? Jalen Ramsey was there. Stephon Diggs was in that house. Venus Williams, James Corden, and Gronk were dancing with the Laker girls and reminding everybody of yet another reason why Gronk is never going to play football ever again.
Roger
because
that.
His life off the gridiron is so much better than his life on it. Check out Gronk. Are you watching on CBS Sports Network? Look at him grooving with the Laker girls. Right? As for the game itself, the Lake Show closed out a perfect homestand, and they moved to an association best 12-2 on the season. LeBron goes for 25, 11-10. Another triple-double to complete the set. He is now the first player in league history with a triple-double against every single team in the NBA. That is an absolute trip. Anthony Davis said as much.
Amazing to be able to do that. Every team is something special. You know, Fricker had been playing for a long time, so, you know, it was a matter of time before it happened. But just a tribute to all his hard work.
You said it's trippy. I mean, it is pretty amazing. It is a trip. And so are the Lakers. Again, for the first time in a long time, man, they're a blast. I knew they'd be better. I had no idea they'd be the best show in town already. And they are. And it's not just because of LeBron. It's not just because of AD. One of the biggest reasons the Lakers are killing it once again is because of, and wait for it, Dwight Howard. Yes, I said it. In fact, that's not even doing it justice. Dwight David Howard. Attacking offensively and wrecking house defensively.
KCP goes goalward with a two-stroke final slam, Dwight Howard.
That's the way you do it. You don't anticipate your teammate making a layup. You anticipate him missing the layup so you're in position.
This pass blocked by Dwight. Another Laker rejection. Here we go. KCP. Danny Green on his way. There it goes.
Spectrum Sportsnet. You want a freaking trip. I literally still cannot believe what I'm seeing from the big fella. I mean, sure, part of it is I'm still not used to seeing him out there rocking the 39 and going Larry Zonka on one end and Dominic Hasek on the other. This guy is making hustle plays. This guy's lighting a fire under his teammates and the crowd. Dwight David Howard, if you need him. And the Lakers do. We all do. Nobody would have expected this from Dwight David. I love it. I am so into this guy and the way he's reinvented himself and the role he's accepted and the energy he's giving them, the juice he's giving them. Who expected that? Nobody. If the Lakers said they were or did, they'd be lying to you. Except they are getting exactly what you'd expect from Anthony Davis, namely 34-7 last night. Rajon Rondo coming off the bench, 8 points, 10 dimes. Then again, the most important thing that Rondo brings pretty much every single night never shows up on a stat sheet. Frank Vogel laid it out.
Rajon's, statistics are not measured on a stat sheet. It's measured in swag. You know, he just gives us some confidence and an air about us that we know we're going into a battle with just a heck of a basketball player. And, you know, he just helps our swag.
Most importantly, we knew that he could do that. He still can. He still can. And nothing helped that out more than this to close out the first half.
They throw up a three. No good. Rebound. They shot it too soon. Here's Rondo to LeBron. Slam dunk with 1.1 to go in the quarter.
My man, John Ireland. Even KCP was getting loose with 13. 3 of 4 from deep, including this dagger to ice the game.
Rebound, volleyball by LeBron. Out to Caldwell Pope. Three-pointer KCP. It's good! And a huge three by Caldwell Pope.
John Ireland. What's up, dude? Say hey to Mace for me. No, the Lakers did not play their best defense of the season last night. They'd be the first to tell you that. LeBron was less than happy with his turnovers, but they still won. They still brought the juice. What I'm saying is, this team's a hell of a lot of fun. And while all the talk coming into the season was about the Clippers and how they weren't just the team to beat in the city, but in the entire West, the Lakers are back with a vengeance. It's not just that they're winning. It's how they're winning. With star power, swag, juice, the car flags are out. The city is once again rallying behind these guys. Because that old cliche about LA is true. This town is about stars. It is about star power. It's a city that appreciates, celebrates, and embraces stars. And the Lakers have them again. Bron, AD. And wait for this. Because I don't want to hear anybody tell me again that they don't have that third star. They don't have a third alpha. Because they do. And no, it's not Dwight. No, it's not even Kyle Kuzma. You probably do need a third star to win it all. And they've got that guy. And that dude is Alex Caruso. Yeah, I said that too. And how do I know he's a star? One, I got two eyes. Two, my guy has a mural on Melrose. And if you haven't seen this mural, you have to. It's incredible. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, you can see it right now. Hell, I am this close to taking this show out of the studio and broadcasting from in front of that mural. That's how majestic that work of art is. If you're not near a TV right now, let me try and describe it to you. But then again, how does anybody ever describe true art? It can't be talked about. It has to be seen. It has to be felt. It has to be experienced. But let me give it a shot. Let me try anyway. The Alex Caruso mural is the Mona Lisa of sports murals. It is the Sistine Chapel, except instead of scenes from the Book of Genesis, it is a scene from a Lakers-Mavs game. Specifically, this scene.
LeBron dribbles on the right side, guarded one-on-one by Hardaway, runs out of room, gets it to KCP, top of the key, Caruso down the middle, slam dunk. Alex Caruso got right down the middle and dunked it.
Sure as hell did. That was a moment of horror and nastiness for anybody not wearing the purple and gold. Except in the mural, Caruso is not just dunking on the Mavs. He's dunking on the entire Western Conference. The bald Mamba is rising up over Luka, Kawhi, Booker, Harden, and Jamal Murray. And they are powerless to stop him. He's about to throw it down with a vengeance, with anger. And for those of you who think that that's a Photoshop, check it. It's real. The only thing fake about it is thinking that Luka, Kawhi, Booker, Harden, and Murray would actually have any chance of stopping this legend. And if you're thinking to yourself, why does that guy get a mural? Let me tell you something. That is the wrong question. The question is not, why did this guy get a mural? It's what took so long. The only answer is, because it is art. You can't summon something like that mural on command. We're dealing with an artist, not a freaking short order cook. The inspiration for the mural was Caruso himself. But specifically, it was this play from earlier in the season against the Mavs. Listen to my man Caruso talk about that mural.
I thought it was fake, to be honest, when I first saw it, because it first came out right after I woke up out of my nap before the game. I didn't think it was real, but it just kind of contributes to the cold following that we've been joking about for the last 6 months. But incredible artwork. I messaged the guy and told him that I appreciate it, and I'm probably going to try and go there tomorrow and take a picture with him and just check it out.
Come on, GOAT. What a humble warrior. All right, so let's talk about a common problem for a moment. The one thing that health experts, dietitians, athletes, and top performers all seem to agree upon is the perfect diet simply does not exist. Even with a balanced, healthy diet, it can be tough to cover your nutritional basis through food alone. This is why there is Athletic Greens. The Athletic Greens Ultimate Daily All-in-One Health Drink has 75 proven vitamins, minerals, and whole food source ingredients, which make it easier for you to get that comprehensive nutrition without the need for a bunch of pills, powders, or complex routines. It is the most complete supplement for a better you, and it's different from everything else. It's different because it's delivered in powder form. It's mixed with water. Athletic Greens requires fewer capsules, it has superior absorption, and it does not include any binders or fillers. One scoop of Athletic Greens provides a convenient, affordable, and tasty solution to fill the gaps in your diet. So if you're looking to boost energy, strengthen your immune system, or support gut health, that's important, this is the product for you. Even if you're an athlete or a professional seeking enhanced performance, maybe you travel frequently and you struggle to maintain your routine on the road, then Athletic Greens takes the guesswork out of everyday good health. Why not just try it? Jump on over to athleticgreens.com/Rome and get my special offer right now. 20 free travel packs valued at $79 with your first purchase. athleticgreens.com/Rome. Kyle Whittingham. Kyle, it's great to have you back. How are you?
Doing well, Jim. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, too. Coach, all right, so you beat UCLA 49-3 Saturday night. That's a game, Kyle, where you had more than 500 yards offensively. The defense forced 5 turnovers. You had 5 sacks. I know as a coach, you're always going to look for areas where you can improve. But when you look at that game from an overall team perspective, the domination on both sides, how pleased were you with what you saw?
Well, it was a great effort by our guys, and you know, like you mentioned, we played well offensively and defensively. Special teams were kind of average, but the offense seems to be in high gear right now, and it all starts with our quarterback Tyler Huntley. He's having a terrific year, and really he's the team leader and makes that thing go.
You know, he had a big game, 335 passing yards. He had a couple of TDs and a rushing touchdown. You and I have talked about him in the past, and he's in the middle of another special year, as you point out. He's starting to get some attention as a Heisman candidate, but I would still argue that he does not get the national respect that he deserves. What should people know about him as a player and a leader that they don't know?
Well, first of all, his numbers, and if they don't know, I don't know why they don't know, but his numbers are terrific. I mean, his completion percentage is amongst the nation's leaders. His touchdown to interception ratio is off the charts. His yards per attempt, his yards per completion. I mean, just all the things he's doing on the field are obvious and phenomenal. And then, every team has, leadership, but he is the leader of the leaders. And that's really something that, he's just been instrumental to our success this year. And his leadership has been invaluable. I mean, he got banged up about a month ago. And I'm telling you right now, the majority of players, if they would have been in his condition, would not have played. And he was just a warrior and kept playing, and I think our players really took note of that.
Utah head football coach Kyle Whittingham is my guest. Let me ask you about Zach Moss. He had another huge game with 200 all-purpose yards, and he had a couple of touchdowns. I had him on the show earlier this season, shortly before he broke the school rushing record. I could not have been more impressed with what I heard from him. How far has he come as a player since he first arrived on campus?
Well, he's come a long ways. When he was mature when we got him, he was much more mature than a typical freshman was. And we had the two of his teammates, you know, Tyler and him and Damari Simpkins, our receiver, were all three teammates at Hollandale High School back in Florida. They all came into the same class, and those guys have been just terrific. They, you know, Zach has basically rewritten the record book here for running backs, holds just about every rushing record there is. We've already talked about Tyler, and then Damari is the leader of our receiving group. And all three of them will get their degrees this fall, and that's, to me, most important. They're all going to be graduating, and they've just been terrific for our program.
We're talking Utah Utes football. Kyle Whittingham's back on the program. I talked to Dabo Swinney on the show yesterday, and he was talking about how November is the championship phase. Moss said after the win over UCLA that this is, quote, championship month. So do you notice an increase in focus when it comes to November? Like, is it something you have to dial up, or do the players take care of that themselves?
Mostly takes care of itself. We've got, like I mentioned, great leadership on this team. We got 18 scholarship seniors, and they did a great job of making sure that we stay focused and block out the distractions and the noise. And you know, like I said, it's been a joy to coach this team and be around them. And they're right. I mean, November is where you put up or shut up, and that's you know, something that we take a lot of pride in.
Talking to Kyle Whittingham for a few more moments. You know, I actually had another one of your former players, Saints safety Marcus Williams, on the show yesterday. He was talking about how much he loved the family environment in the program. What do you remember about coaching Marcus? And then how proud are you of how he's shown up in his first three seasons in the NFL?
Oh, very proud. He's doing a great job. He was a terrific player for us. He came in without a lot of fanfare. He was not a highly recruited kid, but just continued to work and develop. And by the time he left here, he's one of the best free safeties we've ever had. And he's obviously having a very productive professional career. And he was a great member of our team and got his degree. I mean, he did everything right as well while he was here. And he was just a terrific player for us.
Man, he's a pro, too. He really carries himself like a pro already, even as a young guy. So you're up to number 7 in the latest college football rankings. I'm curious, how much attention do you pay to that? Like, is it something you use as motivation with your team, or you just completely ignore it?
We completely ignore it. We just worry about the task at hand and what's right in front of us and worrying about controlling what we can control, and that is trying to get a win this week against Arizona. There's still a lot of football left. There's matchups that amongst those top 7 teams that we know are going to take place. So we just try to block all that out and take care of our business, and when all is said and done, if what we've done is good enough, then so be it. But again, just taking care of our business is our number one priority.
We're talking to Kyle Whittingham. You know, your brand is pretty clear in terms of what it looks like on the field. It wasn't just the offense that was putting up huge numbers on Saturday. It was the physicality that you played with on both sides of the ball. I'm curious, does each unit feed off of each other when it comes to that physicality? Like, is it contagious, or is that just kind of a myth that people in the media like to hype up?
No, I think it is a fact, and it's something that we take a great deal of pride in, is our physicality, particularly in the line of scrimmage. And what is absolutely critical to us on both sides of the ball is how we run the football offensively and how we defend it on defense. And to me, that's one of your best indicators of how physical your team is. And right now we're leading the Pac-12 conference in rushing offense, and our defense is leading the nation defending the run. And so that's something that our guys take a great deal of pride in, and really is the starting point for us offensively and defensively, is being physical at the line of scrimmage and having the run game be a positive for us.
Cal, one more thing about the run game and the offense. And we talked about this. When we talked in August, we talked about the return of offensive coordinator Andy Ludwig. Is this pretty much the offense that you envisioned when he came back?
Exactly. The offense that we're running right now complements our defense exceptionally well. And it was the same way when he was here the first time around. You know, this is his second stint. Obviously, he was here in my first 4 years as the head coach. And it was great to get him back. You know, wish we could have gotten him back a little sooner, but better late than never. And he's doing a terrific job for us.
So Carmelo Anthony made his debut for the Trailblazers last night against the Pelicans. And it was a debut that was coming with a lot of heat. A YouTube hype video, a lot of heat, a lot of hype, but there were a lot of questions. And at least one of those questions was answered. What number was Melo going to wear? Because the two numbers that he had worn in the NBA, 15 and 17, were both retired in Portland. The number that he wore at Oak Hill, 22, also retired. So he went for 00, which took kind of a moment to get used to, right? I mean, exactly what was that about? Was that a tribute to Tony Delk, Greg Ostertag? Nope. There was an actual reason for double zero. Actually, Melo has a lot of reasons for it, and he broke it all down in an Instagram post. You see, for Melo, double zero represents the following. A number greater than any assignable quantity or countable number. Without end. A process that never stops. Can never be given an exact value. Simplicity and balance. The mysticism of our past and the possibility for an eternal future, given the infinity symbol, a sense of awe and wonder. Also, he rocked the double zero because of the infinite nature of God. He went on, we cannot stay away from God without him trying to bring us back to him. The chance to have a new and great beginning with the past left behind where it belongs. Beginnings or end, and finally, Alpha and Omega. Damn, that's heavy. That's more than just, hey, you know what, I'll take whatever you got. Or, man, I really liked Robert Parrish and how he got after it in the low post. But I guess it all makes sense, right? Even knowing the reasoning behind it, seeing Melo, though, getting all Benoit Benjamin with it was a little funky. But sure enough, he finally got around to it. He made his debut last night. And just over a minute into the game, Melo got his first look, and he knocked it down.
Swings left for Melo. Melo takes a three from the side. It's good. And Carmelo Anthony, with his first points as a Trailblazer, is a triple.
Blazers radio. And this is why they brought this guy in. This is what he is there to do. Hit threes, stretch the floor, create space for Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. And that first shot felt like the start of a Hollywood story. You know, the guy who'd been out of the league for more than a year, getting that first look, lighting it up. Unfortunately, that's not how that went. He finished the night 4 of 14, 10 points, 4 boards, 5 fouls, 5 turnovers. More fouls and more turnovers than boards. So not great. And if you're a Melo hater, you're probably already pounding the digits on your phone to call in and clown him and bring up his team worst minus 20 that he had last night. That's it. That's true. That's not a good number. But it's also not a great stat. Only two guys in Blazers gear had positive numbers last night. So there's going to be a lot of takes flying around about what he did, saying, see, this guy's horrible on defense. He didn't pass. He didn't change. He's still the same. This is never going to work. There are going to be people pulling quotes from his YouTube video, like, you know, when he said this.
What happened before is the past. I can't dwell on that. I learned from that. This happened at a point in time in my life where I do have a lot of clarity and understanding of different situations and just life, and, you know, my approach is totally different.
So people were going to pull that clip and then say, hey, wait a minute, look at the box score. See, he hasn't changed. Guys like that never change. His approach isn't totally different. It's the exact same as it's ever been. Shoot first, defend never. And to which I'm going to say, relax, just chill. It's only one game. It's one game. It's his first game in more than a year. Not only is it one game, it's one game without Damian Lillard. So it's not even one game with a team at full strength. I don't know if the guy has changed or not. I'm not sure 24 minutes in a game with a group of guys that he barely knows, though, is enough to make that determination. Yes, I know he didn't have an assist. Yes, I know he was slow to rotate on defense. But I also know that if you were expecting him to show up and start dishing out dimes like he was Jason Williams, or lock guys down defensively like he was Gary Payton, then you're all begging. If that was your expectation, or you're going to bash him for not doing either one of those things, man, you're a fool. Melo's not there to do any of that. Melo is there to space the floor, be an offensive threat from beyond the arc, where he was 2 of 3, and to create problems so teams cannot lock down exclusively on Lillard and McCollum. And again, there's the non-guaranteed contract with a team that's had a ton of injuries and needs a spark. Yeah, I mean, it'd be great if this guy was Steph Curry on one end and Dennis Rodman on the other, but nobody is expecting that. Nobody. In fact, nobody plays that game anyway. Nobody is that guy. So maybe it works, maybe it doesn't, but one game without Dame is not enough to judge Melo. Not enough to say, see, this guy's exactly the same. Nothing has changed. What the hell were they doing? I just told you what they're doing. And I'm telling you I need to see a little bit more before I judge him and I judge them. Again, no risk, no reward. And by the way, there's almost no risk at all here. So I still like the move in and of itself. I'm not sure it's going to work or not, but I like the move. There's no risk. Let's see how it looks. Let's see how it plays out. And let's see how he looks playing alongside Dame. It's too soon. Too soon to bury this guy. Are you craving some protein after a good workout? Of course you are. This time, don't make a shake. Do not eat a bar. Instead, grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty and tender. It's made from real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. And it goes wherever you go. To the game, to the gym, to the beach, anywhere. So look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're buying that way. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, be sure to ask for it by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? Bryant McFadden is my guest. Bryant, great to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, Jim. Thank you for having me.
It is so good to have you. All right, so a lot of things that I could talk to you about, starting with either college or pro football, but let me ask you about the aftermath, Bryant, of the Steelers-Browns game last week. Miles Garrett is in New York for that appeal today, but if you were to go back to last week, what were you thinking when you saw him attempt to hit Mason Rudolph with his own helmet, and have you ever seen anything like that on a football field?
Well, I was shocked. I was surprised. We know Miles Garrett is a guy that's full throttle every time he's on the football field. Every snap is a meaningful snap for him. And he actually, you know, acted as such in that play. And after the play was over, of course, there were some extracurricular activities by both parties, Mason Rudolph and Miles Garrett. But to see Miles Garrett swing the helmet and actually make contact, I mean, my mouth dropped down to the floor. I've never seen anything like that happen. I've seen, you know, a lot of individuals go at it. You know, we've seen over and over again, right, guys swinging at each other with their fists connecting on helmet, connecting the helmet. You know, and even seeing people kick each other, things like that. But I've never seen a player swing a helmet and hit another player that was without his helmet. I've never seen that before. So I was surprised, but, you know, the NFL went and handled the situation as such. I really felt like Mason Rudolph should have been suspended as well. He wasn't. And, you know, I guess we have to wait and see what happens with Garrett and his appeal.
So, Brent, lay that out. Why was Mason Rudolph also culpable? What did he do that warranted a suspension?
He was involved. Because if Mason Rudolph never attacked Miles Garrett, right, would Miles Garrett have swung the helmet at Mason Rudolph? I don't think so. And there's two sides to every story, and both individuals are wrong. I think Miles Garrett was wrong for driving Mason Rudolph into the ground like he did, and I think that prompted Mason to try to take Miles Garrett's helmet off, and eventually he kicked him in the groin area. I don't know if that was accidental or not, but one incident led to another. So if Miles Garrett, if they pull Miles Garrett, and this is a hypothetical, Jim, if they pull Miles Garrett off of Mason and Mason never confronted Miles Garrett, would Miles Garrett have swung the helmet at Mason Rudolph? I don't think so.
Bryant McFadden joining us. Let me ask you this. Like, we don't know exactly. I mean, we saw the way it played out. We've seen the video, Bryant, over and over again. We don't know exactly what was said. We don't know everything that took place. In your mind, is there ever a scenario where it's okay to swing a helmet on a guy the way he did?
No. No, no. I mean, when you play in the NFL, Jim, we all are connected, and we all have a mutual respect for each other. And I think there is a better way to handle certain issues. And when you swing a helmet in a moment where you're extremely emotional, you can actually cause serious harm to that individual. And our job is to, in between the lines, our job is to do whatever we need to do for our team to win ball games. But outside the lines, you want that individual to go home to their family, healthy, and continue to do what they've been called to do, which is play football. So I don't know if something was said, and if it was, that's not a bad, that is a bad look on Mason. But Miles Garrett, you have to try to handle yourself as a professional. And guess, and the thing is about they're getting ready to play each other in a few weeks. There's a way to get back without it being known to the public, like we saw last Thursday night. So it wasn't a good look for both parties, clearly for Myles Garrett. And I think, you know, he's a great person. He's a heck of a football player. His emotions just got the best of him.
We're talking to Brian McFadden. He's a CBS football analyst, a two-time Super Bowl champion. Brian, I don't want to spend all this time on that, but you just said something else pretty interesting. You said that they're going to play each other again, and there's a way to get some get back. Like, what are you talking about? Like, what could you have done? Talk to me, man. Hey, lay it out.
Hey, Jim, you know what? When you play defense, your job is to hit the offensive player at any given time. And if I'm Myles Garrett, and I'm just giving you a hypothetical based on some of the experiences I've been around. Oh, we got Pittsburgh coming up. Mason Rudolph, you said, and this is a hypothetical. We're just saying if Mason said something, or if, you know, he accidentally kicked him in the groin, or whatever the case may be, I'm going to have an opportunity to tackle you. And when I tackle you, I'm going to do some extra. I mean, you can kind of grab him by the Adam's apple if you want to underneath his helmet. I mean, you can try to poke his eyes out a little bit. I mean, there are things you can do that would probably, if they found out about it, would only warrant a fine. And I think you're okay with that fine than being suspended for the rest of the season.
Now, Brian, you know the game's changed since you played it, but let me ask you that. I mean, did you ever have any of those get-backs? Did you ever have an opportunity where you thought, hey, there's a trachea blast right there in front of me. I'm going to take that opportunity. I might get in a little eye gouge right here.
Nah, you know what? I never had that incident, but I can tell you this much. In college, we were playing, I think it was Wake Forest, and we blocked the field goal. And I didn't have no issue with any of the Wake Forest players. Clearly, at that time, we were always beating them up anyway. So it was like, you know, take your beating and going back home. But I recovered the fumble. And I tried to get up and run with the fumble, but I fell. And when I fell, the offensive lineman jumped on top of me because they were trying to get the ball back. Granted, it didn't matter because it was a fourth down play anyway. You know what I mean? So I had the ball. And when I tell you one of the offensive linemen, he was probably about 340, 320, and at that time I was 185, 190. I mean, he literally grabbed me underneath my armpit. And I didn't know I had actually had a muscle or tendon there, whatever it was. But when he grabbed me, my whole right side went numb, and I just hollered, "I don't want the ball, you can have it." And so those are things that kind of happen underneath the pile. I've heard people, you know, get kicked in the groin area. I heard people get their eyes poked out. You know, that's why a lot of players wear a lot of shields nowadays, Jim, because you really can't touch their eyes underneath the pile when they have a shield on, a visor on.
Absolutely. Brian McFadden joining us. I would, too. I absolutely would. You know, you mentioned playing ball at Florida State, Bryant. I got to ask you, because you came a little bit after the fact, but you played DB. I got to ask you about one of my all-time favorite athletes, Terrell Buckley. How about T-Buck? How prominent a member was he of that Seminole family? And as you were coming up as a DB, what did you think about him and his game?
Man, I love T-Buck coming up. Man, I used to call T-Buck the three-step king. If a quarterback ran a three-step route on T-Buck, it's a book. He's taking that to the house. And I think, you know, go back to the famous highlight in Ann Arbor. I can't remember the quarterback, but I remember he took one back against Desmond Howard. T-Buck was very, very influential in my career when I was there. He actually came back and studied with me. We used to watch tape together. He's doing a tremendous job at NC State. He's one of the best. You know, Deion Sanders is the first defensive back you talk about. He's the first defensive player you talk about when you talk about Florida State legends. But T-Buck is right there. I mean, in 3 years, Jim, T-Buck had 21 interceptions. So think about this. By his sophomore year, he was a made man. He was an All-American. But for him to have 21 interceptions in 3 years tells you what type of ball hawk he was. I mean, number 27, he's a legendary player.
Man, I'm so glad to hear you say that, Brian. I mean, sincerely, I am so glad to hear you say that, because when he went to the pros and he went to Green Bay and they'd have those legendary battles with the Dallas Cowboys and Michael Irvin sometimes would turn him inside out, it was always me against the world. I'd always be defending this guy. I'm like, you just don't understand about T-Buck. You don't understand about his ball-hawking ability. You don't understand this guy's vert, his athletic ability. You just don't. You can't explain T-Buck, man. He had that it. I'm so glad to hear you say that. Brian McFadden is joining us. Now, you're a two-time Super Bowl champ. You had a great career in the NFL in Florida State. Very few people have a career like the one you've had, and even fewer make the transition to life after football. I've got to ask, what has that transition been like for you?
It's been fun. You know, it's almost like starting over as a rookie, learning the strides, learning from guys like yourself and others that I watch and I learn from and try to pick up little things here or there, and just an opportunity to continue to get better. I love that. I love learning from the learning, starting from ground zero and getting better. And also, too, as a former player, I think it's imperative for me when someone is watching me or listening to me to learn. I think I need to inform. I need to entertain. I need to educate. And when I'm talking about the game of football, Jim, I view every individual that's listening to me or watching me as my 70-year-old aunt. If I can get her to understand the game better and appreciate the game better, I did my job. And I think that's how I look at what I'm doing now. Make sure whoever's listening to me, when they walk away, yo, B-Mac, I learned something from B-Mac. Wow. Now I can watch the game better. Because one thing about anything that you're visually entertaining, when you know what you're watching, you understand it better and you can enjoy it better.
Brian McFadden joining us. Here's the thing. I mean, you know, you play the game for a long time at a very high level, so you've got that insight. However, not every analyst gets the opportunity you have right now and will handle it the way you do. Something I respect about you is you'll let people behind the scenes. If there's something you want to say, you're going to go ahead and say it. As an example, you've got this amazing story that you told recently about what happened the night before the Super Bowl against the Cardinals. Brian, for those who do not know, what did some of you and your teammates get up to that night?
Hey, Jim, you trying to stir the pot up, huh?
No, it's an amazing story.
Yo, okay, in Pittsburgh, the unique thing about our team, we did everything together. That's why we won so much, because we actually loved each other. We actually rocked with each other. And we used to always play cards every road trip, every home game, the week of practices. We used to always play cards. That was an opportunity for us to get together. So the second Super Bowl, which was in Tampa against Arizona, it was our normal routine. Like the playoff stretch, we would stay up all night playing cards, playing a game called Blu-ray. If you never heard of what Blu-ray is, look it up. It's a great game. This is one of the best card games I've ever played. But the night before the Super Bowl, it was a big deal. You know what I mean? We were playing our Super Bowl for many of us. It was the second Super Bowl in 4 years. So we're excited, and we used to always gather probably, I think, with James Ferrier room. So, you know, all the big-name players would be in there, you know what I mean? James Ferrier, Casey Hampton, James Harrison, Ike Taylor, Deshae Townsend. You know, Troy would be in there, but Troy would be like a narrator. He never really participated, but he'd be like the commentator, you know what I mean? He'd just be talking on the sideline. Ryan Clark, everybody would be in there. So that particular night, Jim, we started the game after we got done with our final meetings, you know what I mean, our little snack, whatever the case was. We probably started playing around 10:45 because we left the hotel that Saturday
right
to get away from our family. So we started around 10:45, Jim, and I didn't get to my room until like maybe a quarter to 8, like
dude,
almost 8 a.m.
So you played cards the entire night before the Super Bowl and didn't even get to your room until a quarter to 8 a.m.
Yo, Jim, when I walked into my room, I literally cussed myself out because I said, B-Mac, you're so stupid. That didn't even make any sense. But everybody, when we all left together. That's the thing. Like a few guys that weren't playing kind of left a few hours before, a quarter to 8. But the majority of us, we stayed there all night. And I remember James Harrison told James Ferrier, Potsy was like, yo, man, y'all see what time it is? Man, the sun is coming up, right? So we like, man, we tripping. He's like, listen, this can't get out to nobody now. Y'all keep this to yourselves. And he said, one thing I know about when you're not prepared, you're going to be alert because you're so afraid that you're not prepared. You're actually going to be more alert than if you got the proper amount of rest. At that time, it didn't make any sense, but it kind of made sense when we got into the flow of the game because we were like, everybody was so afraid of messing up because we didn't get any sleep. So everybody was alert. But yeah, long story short, that was the best card game I was a part of, number one. It was the most intense card game. It was the most entertaining card game. And we went to bed around 8. We got up around 11. And by that time, once you were up, because we had to leave to go to the stadium around like 4 or 5, because remember, it's like a 6:30, 7 o'clock kickoff. I mean, we got into the locker room, everybody's eyes were red.
Dude, that's an amazing story. Was he like, yo, man, what did y'all do last night? Or were they just so locked into their own thing, they didn't know?
They didn't know, and we made sure that was among the players that was in the room, because if we would have lost, Jim, and people would have
got out,
Jim, you would have killed us. You didn't even really know me at that time. You would have killed all of us, right? It would have been worse than Odell and the boat trip. You remember the boat trip the Giants went on?
Of course.
The weekend before the Green Bay Packers playoff game?
Brad, like, what's amazing to me is, like, how were you so locked into that game? Were you not thinking, dudes, like, I know we just played this game, but this is the biggest game of our lives. Was nobody tripping on the game? Were you just all so locked in to a competitive card game?
Yeah,
or maybe was that what you needed?
Jim, at that time, the card game was the most important thing on our schedule.
More important than the Super Bowl, which was in 4 hours.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, Jim, listen. When I tell you our card games used to be intense, oh my goodness, man, Jim, man, listen. That game was actually more intense. No, I'm not going to say than that Super Bowl, because we remember how that game ended. But that was probably one of the more intense games I've ever been a part of. We didn't want to leave. Think about this, from 10:30 to almost 8 o'clock a.m. Think about the amount of decks we went through.
Brian, how much money did you make that night?
Oh, my goodness. You know, this is a hypothetical. If money was involved, right? This
right.
is a hypothetical. If money was involved.
No wonder you weren't walking away, man.
Hey, yo, it was kind of low-key game-changing type money if money was involved.
if it was involved. I love that. That was the most important game on our schedule at that point. McFadden, he is a 7-year NFL vet. He is a 2-time Super Bowl champion. He is a CBS football analyst, and he played his college ball at Florida State. Man, I kept you a long time. Brian, that was great. Let's do it again soon, man. That was a blast.
Hey. No question, Jim, and if you ever want to learn the game of Blu-ray, just let me know. I can tell you got a little bit of luck in you, and you don't mind rolling the dice a little bit. So trust me, I can definitely show you how
down
to get
me in,
involved
man.
In
down
Blu-ray.
Me in, man. Down me in. I'm in. Let's do it. Bryant McFadden, week 12 already of the NFL is here. Hot freaking damn. If there aren't some spicy, spicy matchups on the old TV guide. In fact, I'm so glad I'm going back to New York for the NFL on CBS. I'm going to hit on some of this stuff on Sunday. Check out the matchups. Colts, Texans for first in the division. Key matchup. Ravens and Rams. I love that game. Lamar Jackson under the Hollywood lights at the Collie Monday night. And 12 other games in between on Sunday, including Dallas going to Foxborough to play the Patriots. Brady and Dak. Edelman and Amari, Jera and Bob Kraft, Hoodie and the Clapper.
Clap on, clap off, the Clapper.
No doubt, the biggest mismatch Sunday afternoon in New England is going to be between the dudes wearing the headsets on the sidelines, right? One guy's got that fistful of jewelry and is regarded as the best to ever do it. In fact, nobody even questions that at this point. The other guy is Jason Garrett, and Garrett's claim to fame is red hair and clapping. But nobody does those two things quite like him. I mean, I could do a whole take on how the Hoodie could trade places with the Clapper on Sunday and win by 4 TDs with the Clapper's guys. But why would I do that when I can just read this amazing quote from the quote machine himself, Jerry Jones? Now, Jerry didn't say anything about Jason Garrett in a published piece in The Athletic, but he did say something about Bill Belichick. According to Jerry, way back in the mid-90s, after the Hood was bleep canned by the Browns, Jerry and Belichick ran into one another at a ski resort, of all places. And Jerry told this publication that the Hood approached him and said, quote, "I can coach. If you ever get the opportunity, don't forget about me." End quote. So Bill Belichick said that to Jerry Jones. Don't forget about me. Jera, being Jera, did exactly that. He forgot about the Hood. And instead remembered Chan Gailey. And he went with Chan Gailey to replace Barry Switzer. Perfect. How utterly Cowboys of you, Jera. Jera also said in that same piece, quote, "I've thought about that many times. You never know where you can find a great coach. You can find them in a ski checkout line sometimes. End quote. You never know where you can find a great coach. You can find them in a ski checkout line. First off, what the hell is a ski checkout line? What is a ski checkout line? Is that like seven items or less on the mountain? What is a ski checkout line? Well, you tell me that Jerry Jones and Bill Belichick were renting twigs to get down that mountain. Are you going to tell me that there was some zit-faced teenager bending over and trying to slam Jarrett into some boots and saying, how do those fit? Can you feel your toes? How's that? A ski checkout line? I don't know what part of that story I like best. Jarrett and Bill renting skis and boots. Bill pitching Jarrett in the rental line. Jarrett ignoring the pitch. Or Bill freaking Belichick skiing. It's an amazing sequence to kind of try and play out in your mind. Then again, so is Jarrett going with Chan Gailey and Dave Campo over the hood. But then again, as you know, hindsight is obviously 50-50.
Hindsight, 50-50.
I mean, no one knew after his failed stint with the Browns, other than Kraft, and even Kraft didn't know to this extent. I mean, who knew that Belichick would go on to win six Super Bowls and be the greatest coach of all time? I mean, who knew that? And there's a whole hell of a lot of reasons to believe that Jerry Jones would have gotten in the way of Belichick in the ways that Bob Kraft won't. Bob Kraft never tried to rip the phone out of Hood's hands on draft day so he could select Johnny Manziel. Say what you want about Kraft, but he never fired the hoodie for getting too much credit for Super Bowl wins. Jarrett allegedly tried to do both those things. Actually, he did get rid of Jimmy Johnson for that very reason. But if you're a Cowboy fan, you have to hate hearing that the greatest coach ever once went to your owner and said, I'd love to work there. Keep me in mind. And your owner didn't care. Was not interested. Only Jarrett would cop to that story. Anybody else who had the opportunity to hire Bill Belichick and didn't probably would bury that deep inside their soul and only tell a therapist after multiple sessions. Or just try and forget about it altogether. Jarrett, on the other hand, told a reporter 5 days before he rolls the clapper into Foxborough to try to out-scheme the master. The master, who once availed himself in a, quote, ski checkout line. But it's not, let's not act like Jarrett doesn't have the perfect coach. For him, Jason Garrett is the ideal guy for Jarrett. When they win, Garrett gets no credit. When they lose, Garrett gets all the blame. And when you're working for Jarrett, that quality is pretty much more important than any other. Jarrett doesn't want the goat. He wants the scapegoat, or a guy he can manipulate, or a guy who's got red hair, or a guy who claps a lot. Sorry, Cowboy fan. But you got to admit, your dude does have fire lettuce, and he can clap the hell out of it. And that combination is not easy to find in a head coach. In fact, I've never seen it before. And once Jarrett finally does get around to firing Garrett, we probably will never see that combination ever again. The combination of a guy having fire lettuce and being able to clap the hell out of it. He is Arash Markazi. Arash, what's going on, brother? How are you?
Not much, Jim. How are you?
Good, man. Good. So, Ross, let me start with the Lakers because you are all over this beat. They're 12-2. They're playing fun, exciting basketball. They've got stars. There's buzz. There's swagger. For those who do not know, how different does Los Angeles feel when the Lakers are playing like this?
It's totally different. I mean, this is a Lakers town. And so when people say, you know, can the Clippers become Los Angeles' team? No, this is a Lakers town that comes from winning 16 championships, that comes from Showtime, that comes from Kobe Shaq. I mean, again, there's nothing like Los Angeles when the Lakers are rolling, and there's certainly nothing like June in Los Angeles where the car flags come up and everyone is excited. So, you know, this city, and again, the Lakers have never been that bad for that long, and when I say bad, Jim, they were the worst team, worst percentage for 6 years. I mean, they and the Knicks were the worst teams in the league for 6 years. So not only like are they good and are a playoff team, they are the best team right now.
It's hard to fathom that they were that bad that long, but they were. Arash Markazi is my guest. Now, Arash, 14 games is not an enormous sample size, but what do you make of the energy and the intensity that LeBron is playing with so far?
Jim, he's the type of player that if someone says that he's washed or he's done or he's not the king, he'll use that. And it might just be one person. It might just be one story, but he used that. And the way that he's playing through these first 14, 15 games of the season, it's almost like he has something to prove. You look at the last 10 games, I mean, five triple-doubles. He's leading the list, 11 of them, like, assists per game. Again, he's not the point guard technically, but he kind of is. So, I mean, what he's doing right now, again, it's almost like he's trying to prove himself, which is crazy.
Hey, listen, it might be something of a surprise to some, Arash, given the miles he has on him, given the injuries coming off of, given his age. So maybe surprising, but nothing like the shock that is Dwight Howard. Now, back in August, you wrote a piece for the LA Times arguing Dwight is not the villain that Laker fans make him out to be. What did you see that made you explore that issue, that angle?
Well, first of all, the trade for Dwight wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like they gave up a ton. So I think when people look at his 1 year here, it was not a great year, but it's not like they traded, you know, three future first round picks, a bunch of young players. Beyond that, what I said was Dwight can give this team what it needs. Again, they need a guy to come off the bench and to provide some help. You know, again, if DeMarcus Cousins doesn't get hurt, this signing does not happen. And quite frankly, Jim, I don't even know if he has a job in the league. For a guy like Dwight to get a non-guaranteed deal, that was his one shot. So I basically say, listen, let him come back and allow him the opportunity to provide this team what he can do. Now, listen, if he can't do it, you cut him, you move on, that's fine. And what has been really cool to see this year is just Laker fans hated him so much because, Jim, he was the first guy to leave this team. No superstar made the voluntary decision before Dwight to say, listen, I know you're paying me more, but I'm leaving you, and I'm going to Houston. So he decided to come back, and it's been so cool to see him become a productive player here.
Arash, I think it's amazing. In fact, I'd be hard-pressed to think of another comeback or a guy showing up like that when everybody had given up on him. It's amazing to see. Arash Markazi is joining us. You also recently, Arash, had a conversation with Kevin Love. Before we get into some of the details, what was your overall sense in terms of where he is with his life and his basketball career right now?
You know, I mean, he was basically telling me he was like looking around the locker room and he's the oldest guy on the team now. I mean, he just remembered being like a vital piece of a championship team. And now he's sort of like trying to help these young guys out. And he's 31, obviously happy with his role. But I do think a part of him would like to be, again, on a championship team, like on a contending team. But it was amazing what he's done with his life and talking about, you know, dealing with pressure and depression, like anxiety. And he was like one of the first guys I remember to talk about this. So to hear him and use his platform in such a powerful way has been incredible.
You know, he actually was one of the very first to come out and do that. So what motivated his decision to make it public? And how does he feel about that decision right now?
You know, he said that he didn't want to suffer by himself. And he thought if he could help just one kid out, it was worth it. And Jim, he's helped more than one kid out. I mean, he's used this platform to talk to team employees, to talk to players. Again, so some of these players don't want to come out and talk about the struggles because, again, we view them as having this amazing life, but there's a lot of pressure that comes with that. And another thing that he wants to do is help out younger kids who are going through this, whether they're high school players or in college. And so, you know, I mean, here's this guy who has this like incredible life, and he's saying, like, I feel you. I get depressed. I have these feelings, and that's okay, because for a long time it was like, unless you're hurt, you should play. Well, his grandmother passed away, and he never had the proper time to grieve her loss. So, you know, again, we view these guys as sort of these figures that, listen, you're getting paid a ton of money. You should perform. It's not like that.
We're talking to Arash Markazi. Now, Arash, I want to ask you something. I want to get into this, and I want to preface it by saying how incredible I think this is. Last week, you posted a couple of photos of yourself with the caption, hashtag Friday Motivation. The difference in weight from one photo to the other is absolutely incredible. When were those photos taken, and what kind of feelings do you have when you see both photos?
Yeah, it's still surreal, Jim. It was Tuesday, September 25th. I had come back from vacation, and I couldn't get the seatbelt to fit. And it was the first time, listen, when you're big, you know you're big. But it was one of those moments where you're like, okay, I have to get the extender. And that was a tough thing. And so I got on the scale. It said 329 pounds. And I don't know why that number stuck with me. Because, again, I knew I was big, but when you're big, you don't go on a scale. 329 pounds. Was such a massive number, and at that point I decided I'm going to do something about this. So every day I'm going to do my cardio. I'm going to do 60 minutes of cardio. I'm going to try to watch my, try to stay under 1,600 calories. The consistency of that, and again, the first month was hard, but Jim, in 1 year, and again, the number is still amazing to me, 130 pounds in 1 year, and it was no fad diet. It wasn't like I did anything nuts. I just said, listen, I'm going to do this for myself. 60 minutes a day, I'm going to walk, run something. And then again, I'm going to watch what I have. Again, I can have a cheat meal like every now and again. But it was just, again, the cool thing about it was that it was a random Tuesday in September because I had done that January 1st or that first Monday or the first day of the month. No, it was a random Tuesday in January. I mean, a random Tuesday in September. And I said, I'm going to take care of myself.
Good for you, Arash. I'm so proud of you, man. You look absolutely amazing. And there's more to it, though. You were recently on the TV show The Doctors, and you were talking about being a two-time cancer survivor. As you point out, one would think that somebody who had gone through cancer twice would be very careful about what they would eat, but food became something of a comfort for you. How would you describe the relationship to food and yourself during that period?
Yeah, it was, food was comforting, because when I got cancer the second time, I was in the hospital for 1 month. And it's sort of like at that point, you just want to make yourself feel good. And so, I would have, pizza and fried chicken and really foods that I should not have been having. And then when I got released from the hospital, again, you would have thought you would have taken care of yourself. And again, food was a comfort. So I didn't feel good about myself. So I resorted to food. And It was a cycle that, again, lasted 14 years. I mean, I checked into the hospital back in 2005. At one point my doctor said, listen, we're not worried about the cancer. We think we have that under control. I'm worried about your weight. And nothing like anyone said clicked. And I know there might be people out there, it takes that moment for it to click. And for whatever reason, it was the seatbelt for me and looking at the number 329. That relationship with food was hard because, again, when I didn't feel good about myself, I went to food. And so, your friends tell you to kind of watch what you eat, and then you get upset at them. So it took a long time. I wish it hadn't gotten to the point that it did, but I feel great now.
Arash, I think that, in my personal opinion, a lot of us use food. Right. And without going through nearly what you went through, and we still use food. I understand this. Let me ask you really quickly. What would you say to somebody who's listening right now where maybe it hasn't clicked? Maybe they're in a situation similar to the one that you were in. What would you say to them?
The key is just take care of yourself and starting small. So when I say 60 minutes, it doesn't have to be 60 minutes. Do something for 20 minutes and you don't have to run. Just walk. Just. And then when you feel comfortable, jog. And then if you want to run, it's okay. You don't have to push yourself. Don't have to challenge yourself. Do something a little bit different than what you're currently doing. But the consistency is the big thing because I know, listen, when I got on that treadmill and I'm 329 pounds, that is a big hill to climb. You're not going to lose 130 pounds in 1 day. But I am an example that if you do it consistency, a little bit of cardio, watch what you put in yourself, and you can change. And again, the first month is going to shed because, again, I went from, having the worst foods and not going to the gym to doing something. So, again, if you feel like it, don't push yourself. 20 minutes, 30 minutes, walk, jog, do something, and I promise you, your life will change.
He is a columnist for the LA Times. He is a Los Angeles legend. He is a very good friend of the program. Arash, man, I'm so proud of you, so happy for you, and you earned it, man. You did the work, you're still doing the work, and it is great to see you look and sound like this, Arash. Great, great job by you.
You're the best, Jim. Thanks so much.
Good night now!